this hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL and from you. Call now, 801-575-8255. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaos with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. And Governor, thanks for being with us in the middle of, it feels like the middle of summer, but yet the kids are going back to school.
I know, Maria. Oh, I just can't believe that it's happened so quickly. I'm not sure where July went, and August is now more than halfway over. But it's been a great summer, and my daughter's back to school tomorrow. And that's how it goes.
It's crazy how quickly those things
way
happen.
Too fast.
I think the pandemic had something to do with that. Time just seemed to speed up or something. I don't know. I've been in some sort of time shift since 2020.
We were having that conversation today and with my staff, and I don't know where the time's going. It goes by way too fast, and we're going to blink and be in a home somewhere playing bingo. So we're looking forward to that, but it is
not
going
blink.
Way too
no
fast.
No blinking.
So, slow down.
Governor, let's start out. Let's talk about water.
Okay.
So it's been a hot summer. We've had some nice storms of late, but we are still seeing some pretty significant water shortages. Talk about your concerns and how we're doing.
Sure. Well, let me begin by thanking the residents of Utah, and I do this every chance I get because they've been incredible. We have seen significant reductions in some of our water districts. I've heard numbers from 25% to 30% less usage per capita than last year. Others, it's 2% to 5%, but we've seen some massive cutbacks from farmers, ranchers, residents, businesses, churches, everybody really, really pitching in and doing their part. If you drive around and look at the yellow lawns, that makes me really happy. That means people are trying. And we've also been blessed with a really solid monsoonal moisture period of time. Southern Utah is getting hit almost every day. My son, who's in Cedar City, told me they've had rain almost every day for a week, and that's been true in St. George and other places. St. George went over 90 days with no rain, and fortunately, they've been getting much more. So how we're doing? As a state, we are actually 4%, our reservoirs are 4% higher than they were at this time last year. That's huge. We did not expect that. No expert thought that. They thought we'd be significantly below where we were last year. Now, that still means we're 15% below average. So we are in a drought. There is no question. 100% of the state of Utah is in a drought. The drought is not as severe as it was last year, which is good news. But when you have 20 years on and off of drought, there's kind of a building or a multiplier effect that happens. And so even though we are getting these storms, we didn't have a great snowpack last year, and that's where most of our water storage comes from, is from snowpack. So we desperately need snowpack. We need people to continue to conserve. And then there's the bigger issue, which is more than just Utah. And this drought is affecting the entire West, and the hydrology of the Colorado River, which is so important, not to all of our state, but for a significant portion of our state. And the hydrology of that river being so low right now is impacting all of these Western states that rely on that river, as well as Mexico. At the end of that river, and we have the Colorado River Compact that divides up how much water we each get, but there's just not as much water as the experts thought there was going to be, and so that's where we're really facing some significant challenges. You see it at Lake Powell, you see it at Lake Mead, and it's not just a water challenge; it's an electricity challenge, because that's what we generate at those dams. We generate so much electricity for millions of residents across the West, and those are the issues that we're working through right now.
It's obvious at some point we're going to have to do more.
Yes.
What we're doing is better, but yes, Not at the point where we need to be. What does that look like?
Yeah. So we will continue to work with the legislature. I've got a meeting in the next couple of weeks with the leadership from the legislature to talk about kind of what some of those next steps are going to be. We certainly know that secondary metering is a huge piece of this. So many of our secondary water connections, which is what most people use for their lawns, they're not even metered. And when when we put meters on, we are seeing an immediate 25 to 30% reduction. Even though nothing else changes, we just meter it, people are using less. They're just much more conscious of it. And so we got a significant amount of money. We just released about $200 million for projects related to that money. Mm-hmm. But that takes time. So that's going to take a couple years to get all of those installed. It's a very labor-intensive process. We have to do more on the Great Salt Lake, and we are buying water rights for the Great Salt Lake, something we've never done before, but we need more money to do that. We're going to be leasing water rights from farmers and ranchers, trying to get more of that water into the stream beds and preserving the Great Salt Lake. That's going to be a really big focus of ours over the next 5 years.
I do the greenhouse show on Saturday. Yeah. We've heard a lot about flip your strip. Yeah. Okay, a lot of people are doing that, but it's really expensive to flip your whole yard. Do you see the possibility of any other incentives down the road to help people do that?
Yeah, so we desperately want to increase that as well. When I said we need some more funding, we passed, a lot of people don't realize this, we've had flip your strip programs before, but they've been kind of water district specific and not a lot of money associated with that. We were able to convince the legislature to give us $5 million for a statewide program, first statewide program in the country. And the demand, this is I think, really positive news. The demand for those programs went up about 500% since last year.
People can see how nice they look.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It's not just putting down rocks.
It's not. For a long time, people thought, oh, those are ugly. We have to have grass. And now they're seeing them done well. And they're very attractive and lower maintenance, which people also like as well. And so we're very excited about that. And we're going to try to get more money for those programs so that people can do more of that, so that we can pitch in and help. But I have to say, one thing that's important is it's kind of hard to see people flipping their strip and putting in water-wise landscape and then seeing new lawns being put in at the same time, right? Because then we're not saving. And so as we have to prioritize the money that we have for these programs, we're prioritizing them towards communities that are also incentivizing new buildings with water-wise landscapes. Because you don't want to have somebody put in a lawn and then pay to take it out a year later, right? Let's start with these water-wise landscapes in these areas. So the communities that are being much more aggressive in promoting and starting with water-wise landscapes on new buildings, they're going to be top priority to get the incentives for Flip Your Strip when there's a limited amount to go along, if that makes sense.
It does. Okay, let's move to another issue. How do you respond to the Republican Party resolution supporting a ban on gender-affirming medical treatment?
Sure. So this is a very difficult one. And anytime we are working on these issues that impact children, impact families, I think we have to be very cautious. My party historically has been opposed to government intervention in medical decisions between parents and children and their doctors. And so I think we should always be extremely cautious whenever we are trying to intervene in medical decisions with families and the decision that we saw this during COVID, and we're certainly seeing it with this issue. Now, we do know that there has been new research and new data coming out that shows that there are some long-term consequences to these decisions that are being made, to surgeries and some of the medications that are being prescribed that could be damaging to kids long-term into adulthood. And there is, even within the LGBTQ community, there is a deep discussion and divide over the appropriateness of some of these procedures that are taking place. And so I do think it's appropriate for us to have this debate and this discussion and gather the data. And that's what we're doing right now. We're working with the legislature to gather that data, to listen to experts, to find out what is appropriate, what isn't appropriate, when is it appropriate, when is it not appropriate. And my hope is that we'll be able to come together in a way, again, listening in a very empathetic and compassionate way, understanding the challenges that these kids are facing, and helping them and their families make the right decisions that will protect them now and protect them long term. So we don't know exactly what that looks like yet, but that's the discussion that's happening.
Have you had any conversations with lawmakers about this?
I have. Yes. Yeah, I have.
It's likely to come up, so I'm wondering what they're saying.
Yeah, yes. It's definitely, there's no question. In fact, we're planning on it coming up. I mean, that's the discussion, is that we want something to happen. happen here. We don't know what it is yet. I don't know that anybody knows exactly what it is yet. But those are the discussions. So right now, it really is more of a data gathering, fact finding gathering, and then policy proposals will start to be drafted later in the year and heading into January.
All right. We're starting to get our calls lined up now.
Great.
So we're going to take a break and come back with our callers. The number for you to call and ask your question of the governor, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. You're listening to Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Get your questions answered by the governor. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the governor on KSL News Radio.
Good afternoon. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Let's go to the phone lines. And John is in Ogden. And good afternoon, John. What is your question?
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for having me on. Since we need revenue and our medical cannabis has rolled along so well and has become so popular, has there been any about creating a recreational and taxing it for revenue? It seems the surrounding states, Colorado and Nevada, have a lot of money from their recreational cannabis program. And would that help with our conservation of water and perhaps teachers' salaries and schools that we need?
John, thank you for the question. As you mentioned, the medical cannabis program that we put in place a couple of years ago has been, I would say, very successful in the right ways, and that is that it's very heavily regulated. We treat cannabis like we do other medicines. You work with your doctor, and then we have these dispensaries that are regulated very much like a pharmacy to make that happen. I can tell you just I was looking at some numbers between March 2020 and January 2022. We had about just over 60,000 medical cannabis cards that have been issued, and about 60% of those are currently active. So that gives you just a little bit of an idea in a state of 3.3 million people, those that have needed that and have been prescribed that by a doctor. What I can say is there really has not been any discussion about recreational marijuana in the state. It's not something I support. It's not something most legislators support. There's lots of reasons for that. And if you spend any time in those cities that you talked about, I've talked to even some liberal politicians in Colorado and others who really regret that they went that direction. It's been very damaging, especially to many of those that are the most vulnerable. Their homeless populations and others, they've seen it just ravage them, and it's not generally seen by most in that area as a real positive. And so I just don't see it coming to Utah anytime soon, and certainly not while I'm governor.
All right, John, thank you for your question. Let's go to our next caller, and that is Bryce in Farmington. Good afternoon, Bryce. What is your question for the governor?
Yes, I'm wondering, with the water usage for residential outdoor watering, there's a lot of numbers out there, but it seems to hover around 10% of total water consumption in the state is for residential outdoor watering. And I'm wondering, what is a realistic expectation? Because even if we cut 100%, the most we're going to save is 10%. There's a lot of other big users where maybe we could funnel this money to better use it. Open ditch irrigation, open canals, data centers use massive amounts of water, and we keep bringing those in. And, you know, even if we all cut our water use by 50% and villainize all the water users, we're going to save 5% tops.
Sure. Yeah, Bryce, thank you. I think that's a very important question, and I'm glad you brought that up. So here's a couple ways to look at this. So first of all, that 5% is a big deal. I don't think people really realize how much water their lawns use and how much water they use inside their homes. So using less water outside allows us to use more water inside, which prepares us for our growth that's happening out there. Here's the problem with grass, especially grass that is not used for anything. It doesn't it doesn't do anything. It doesn't help the economy. It doesn't help your household. Again, if you have a lawn where the kids play, that's great, and that's what it should be used for. But what we're talking about is non-essential grass. Non-essential grass uses a lot of water in this desert, but doesn't give us any benefit back. All those other water users that you're talking about actually have another benefit. Specifically farmers and ranchers, they grow our food, and that's really important. I'm amazed at how many people don't realize that the only way to get food is to input water. So you if you want food, you have to have water. So that's a really important input that matters. Now, I agree with you on data centers. We have in the past, we've invested more in data centers. We've cut back on any type of the incentives that are going to data centers to move in, because we should not be incentivizing heavy water users like that. But I will also say that many of those data centers recycle that water in ways that it doesn't just disappear. It gets used in other places as well. So those are also net positives. Now, you mentioned something that is critical, though, and you're absolutely right. We should be using more of that money in ways where we can save also more, you know, more gallons per capita. And that is with our farmers and ranchers. And so we set aside $70 million this year specifically for that. You mentioned open ditch irrigation, covering those ditches, implementing new technologies that will significantly reduce the amount of water that is being used by farmers. And just with the amount of money that we appropriated this year, it will be like building a brand new medium-sized reservoir in the state. And that is an area where I do believe that we need to put more money so that we can grow our food with less water inputs, and that's a win-win for everyone. We've also changed the rules this past year, and I've spoken about this a lot, but it's a really big deal. These are the laws that have been in place for since before we became a state. This idea that this use it or lose it, we call it beneficial use doctrine, that you have to use the water right or you will lose that water right. And that incentivizes the wrong thing. That incentivizes farmers, ranchers, others to maybe even overuse water that they don't need just so they don't lose that water right. Now they can allow that water to stay in the ditch to get to places like the Great Salt Lake. They can lease that water for other purposes, and that's something we're working with them on as well. So you could grow maybe two crops of whatever it is you're growing, and then after that you can turn the water over for other purposes, like getting it into drinking water, getting it to the Great Salt Lake. So these are big changes that are just going into effect that are going to have a significant impact. So it's not just about lawns. Let me be very clear. It can't just be about lawns. But I also, you shouldn't underestimate how important lawns are. Like, that's a really big deal. We use billions and billions, trillions of gallons of water on our lawns, and much of that on lawns that only get walked on to mow. They don't get played on. They don't get recreated on. You look out the window everywhere, and we have these. You'll have a McDonald's with a strip of lawn next to it that usually waters the sidewalk, and we're not getting anything out of that. So water-wise landscapes are a big deal, and we're behind the curve in Utah because we made such huge investments before. We've had a surplus of water because people before you and I were born were out there building these reservoir systems, preparing for a future where we would have 3 million people in the state. Now we've got to act and prepare for a future when we have 4 or 5 million people in the state.
Governor, whenever we have this conversation, someone will text in, well, this area, they're watering during the day. This particular text is pointing out the daybreak waters every day in the middle of the day. Is there something being done to incentivize cities to go after commercial properties that are actually watering at inappropriate times?
Yeah, so that's the historically in Utah and in many different states. Again, the water is controlled in different water districts or in these water conservation areas, and those districts are the ones that are responsible. Sometimes they are municipalities are responsible for making sure that water is being used according to the rules of whatever that jurisdiction is. And it's going to be different in every jurisdiction. That's the thing about drought and about water. Sometimes parts of our state, we're a very big state, will get lots of rain and lots of snow and others won't. So it's going to be different in every area. A great example is the Weber District. They have had the last 2 years, they've been had the most significant drought of just about anywhere in the state. They've really been struggling with their capacity, so they've had to be much more vigilant. They've put out rules that you can only water certain times of the week and certain hours of the day, and you'll get one warning, and then they'll actually turn off your secondary water in some places, and they've been doing that. And so the incentive is that you've got to have enough water to drink, and you have to have enough water for everything else that's happening in your municipality. So when it gets low enough, there are triggers in every one of these that then allow them to put in place rules and enforce those rules.
Right. And if people do have complaints, they really should go to the water district.
Exactly. That's the place to go.
Another water question. Why are we saving water to give to farmers who are growing crops that are being sold out of the country? Do we have many crops in Utah being sold in other parts?
We have some, but not as much as people. This is always such a big deal, and people get really fixated on this. And it's alfalfa is the crop that they're worried about. It's less than 20% that actually gets sold outside of the state of Utah. And it's one way to keep these farms alive. Now, we don't sell any of our hay outside of the country, but there are some farmers that do, and I support that. Look, you guys, it's really fascinating to me. So first of all, every district is very different. If 90% of the farmers in Utah stopped farming tomorrow, none of that would come to the Salt Lake Valley. That's not how it works. Water flows downhill, and it flows in different areas wherever you're living. So that's not going to make a difference. The second part of this is where do you think the water comes from for all of these developments that we have in the state? It comes from farmers. That's exactly where it comes from. This is farmland that eventually gets developed. And when that farmland gets developed, then those water rights get turned into municipal rights or secondary water rights. That's how this system has worked, and it's how it's worked forever. I'm less worried about the amount of water that our farmers are using. I'm more worried that we're losing farms across this state. We are losing farms at a record pace. You don't have to worry about getting water from farmers, because that's where the incentive is. The incentive is to sell your farm off and build big buildings, build homes, and significantly reduce the open space that we have in this state. If you're an environmentalist, if you care about the environment, you should be all in on farming and ranching in this state. If you care about water and preserving water, you should be all in on farmers and ranchers. Who do you think developed all of these systems that allow us to get our drinking water here? It's farmers and ranchers that are working to put in the pipelines, working to put in the irrigation systems, working to put in the storage facilities so that they could make a living in this barren desert. So I get a little upset when people are attacking farmers who are doing more than anyone else to conserve water in this state. Over the past years, most of the farmers that I know have cut back almost in half their irrigation usage, and they're dying off because of it. We are losing farms because the economics aren't there when the water is not there. So I would be very careful about this idea that we should just put every farmer out of business and that our state would somehow be better off, because that's not going to be the case.
Let's take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text your questions to the governor at 57500.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL and from you. Call now, 801-575-8255. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaus with Utah Governor Spencer Cox, taking your questions, your calls at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Brent is in Salt Lake. Good afternoon, Brent. What is your question?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call, Governor. I just had a question on the roads. I travel I-15 every day, and I know where every bump is, especially around 50, just before 5300 South, heading north. There's a bad bump, and it doesn't matter which lane you're in, and it's just getting worse and worse. all the potholes, 21st South, or the 201 is really bad. And I was just wondering when and if we're going to be able to get these roads repaired.
Well, Brent, thank you for the question, and thanks for pointing out a couple areas. I drive the freeway quite a bit, and I don't think I had noticed the bump at 5300 South, but we'll certainly look at that one. We're very grateful for UDOT and the work that they do here, and certainly there's a lot of jokes in Utah about the different seasons. There's there's winter, and then there's road construction, and it takes a lot when you live in a state that has so much. Much variance in temperature with the hot and the cold weather, the freezing that makes it very difficult to maintain this type of infrastructure. And we have crews that are going nonstop, being able to do that. Now there have been some supply chain issues and some inflation issues over the past year that have made it a little bit difficult. We had a shortage of concrete, and that certainly hurt some of the road repairs that we had scheduled for this summer that we weren't able to take care of. But we're catching up on that. As more and more concrete becomes available for us to take care of that, I will say that there is additional money coming to the state for our freeways and our infrastructure. The bill that was passed by Congress a few months ago will help in some of those areas when it comes to implementing new infrastructure and maintaining our old infrastructure. I will note, while not perfect, and certainly we do have potholes, but that Utah is routinely recognized as one of the best states in the country for maintaining our infrastructure, including our freeways. But we obviously don't catch all of those potholes and every bumps, but we're working on it, and we'll definitely make a note of those too and see what we can get taken care of soon. Thank you so much.
All right, Brent, thanks for your call. Let's go to Paul, who is standing by in Spanish Fork. Good afternoon, Paul. What is your question?
Hi, Governor Cox. Thanks for taking my call. I, along with other property owners in Utah, recently received our tax notices, our local tax notices for property tax. I've got three entities on here that have increased my taxes. One is Spanish Fork City, the other one's Nebo School District, and the final one is the Central Utah Water Conservancy. Now, for two out of three of those entities, I have direct elections for members on their members of those boards, committees, whatever it is. But not for the Central Utah Water Conservancy District. So I looked up some of the law, and it looks like it's depending on where you live, what county you're in, if the district spans municipalities. But is there any move to having us directly elect those members of water conservancy districts? Because, I mean, as you've talked here, water's critical to everything in Utah. And I think when it comes to taxes, we should have a direct say. Now, I understand there's, indirect appointments by you or other boards, or other governing bodies, but I'd sure love to, essentially have our voice heard, especially when it comes to taxes on our properties. Anyway, could you comment on that?
Yeah, sure, Paul. Thanks for bringing that up. It's a fantastic question, and I think it's a very valid question. Certainly, you're right. The procedure, and I apologize. I don't know off the top of my head what it's like for every district and how that works. But I think in most cases, you're right that the names are usually suggested and brought forward by county commissioners and others. And then there's an appointment process that we go through. We know that the governor's office picks one per open seat, and then that goes to the Senate for ratification in many of those areas. And their meetings are open to the public and open to public comment. You ask the question, though, is there a movement to try to change that? I'm not aware of any movement to try to change that, but certainly I believe that if we have the power to tax people, we need to be open, and we certainly need to be responsive to the citizens that we're impacting. And water is one step removed. you are correct. In many cases, water is one step removed. Obviously, districts that are run by municipalities are the city councils or county councils and mayors are directly responsible there. So it's a valid question. One, I don't know if that's come up before. I don't know if it's been debated before. Certainly not while I've been in office over the past 8 or 9 years. But I think it's an interesting discussion and one worth having. I really appreciate you pointing that out. I would encourage people to get involved. I would encourage people to go to those meetings, and especially meetings where there is a proposal to increase a tax. I've often been surprised at the how few people show up to anything related to government and specifically related to taxing. And you can have a big impact by showing up and voicing your concern and getting your neighbors involved. So thank you for pointing that out. And it's something I'm going to look into more.
Next texter, Governor, says, is there anyone who is watching the number of new apartments and houses being built to make sure that there's enough water to service them?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So the answer is yes, in most cases. Now the answer is yes in all cases. And let me explain. So again, water districts and municipalities have historically had the responsibility for making sure that there's enough water for the people that live there. It may surprise you to learn that there was never any legal requirement that they do that. This past legislative session, I mentioned we passed 11-12 bills that dealt directly with water conservation. One of the bills we passed was a bill that requires now municipalities or counties, whoever the land use authority is, they have to certify that there is enough water for those developments that are happening. So whether it's single family homes, whether it's an office building, whether it's an apartment building, high rise, whatever it is, they have to be able to show. So the water engineers related to the district or the municipality have to be involved in the planning process. Now, many municipalities were doing that already, but not all of them. And so this is a big change and a change that will impact everyone and require us to really look down the road. Okay, if we're going to approve these 200 apartment buildings, do we have enough water? What does that look like? What does it look like in a drought scenario where we are right now? And can we approve this? And if we can't, then they're going to have to start limiting the building permits that happen in those municipalities.
All right, we need to take a break. The number for you to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Back with the final segment of Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Get your questions answered by the governor.
Call 801-575-8255
to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaios, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. And back to our phone lines, we have Dave in Bountiful. Good afternoon, Dave. What is your question?
Yes, I wanted to ask the governor...
So, Dave, I'll need you to turn down your radio. We're getting a bit of feedback from that.
There we go. Sorry about that. I didn't realize it could be that quick. All right. I'm going to ask the governor. I've worked with some professional sports, and I've had a lot of people come into Salt Lake City over the years, and they say how beautiful and how clean it is. And I know that we're really hurting for workforce, hiring people and whatnot, but why aren't we utilizing the prisoners more to clean up? It just seems like our highways and on-ramps, off-ramps are extremely dirty, and they just stay that way, for weeks and weeks. And then the other question was, I've heard something along the lines of them piping fresh water from the Louisiana area, and wondered if he had heard of that at all and if that is actually an option.
Yeah, thank you. Both great questions. We appreciate that. So, as some of you know, I'll take the first question first. We recently created a new prison, and it was a huge undertaking, and getting the prisoners moved has been a really just just a a huge undertaking to move over 2,500 prisoners. If you think through some of the logistics of that, how difficult that is and has to be. Every prisoner is very unique. You can't put certain populations together. Some of them you have to take one at a time. Some of them you can take in bunches. But it took an incredible amount of planning in several days. We're also a little bit understaffed, unfortunately, when it comes to our prison. You mentioned that there's a labor issue right now, and that's exactly the problem that we're dealing with is a labor shortage in state government as well. And so this is a shout out to anybody that's listening. We are hiring corrections persons to work at the state prison. We have mandatory overtime right now because we don't have enough people working out there, and so it's really taxing. Of course, public safety is our top priority, and no one is at risk. But to do things like that, to have prisoners taken outside of the prison to do cleanup projects and things like that, that takes additional staff to do. And because staffing is so low right now, it makes it a little harder to accomplish some of those things that we would like to. So anybody listening out there, it's a great job, great benefits. We're working on increasing pay as well so that we can attract more people into the labor force and help out there. But we want to keep Utah clean. And so we appreciate our volunteer groups. We've had the Adopt a Highway program for a long time, and we want to continue to encourage volunteers, church groups, youth groups to get involved to help keep our cities clean and our freeways clean as well. So really, really good question there. When it comes to piping in water, the answer is that I think everything is on the table right now. There have been some discussions about the possibility of pipelines that would move water from one part of the country to another to impact places that are in drought. If you look historically, sometimes the Midwest is in drought. Of course, right now this drought is affecting the West with the climate changing. We're not certain how long that will be the case, if that will always be the case. But having a system of pipelines that allow us to move water across state lines could be very beneficial to the country and right now to the West, but maybe other places in other times. So it's certainly something that is being discussed. It's something that's being discussed at the federal level as well. I would say it's a long ways away from something like that ever happening, but we're willing to look at every possibility that's out there.
Governor, our next listener wants to know, when will Utah begin phasing out the tax on senior citizens' Social Security income? They say Utah is only one of 13 states that continue to impose this tax.
Yeah, so that has already started. We actually have passed a couple tax cuts that go directly to Social Security. And so we passed the first one, my first session as governor. It was really important, something I campaigned on, a significant reduction in that tax. And then we passed more tax decreases this past year that will come into play this coming year. So you'll see that in when you get ready to pay your taxes next year in January, February, filling that out as you're towards the April 15th deadline. You'll see that rolling back. This was really important to me. The initial cuts have been phased based on income, so that the wealthiest people would still be paying tax on that, but most seniors would not. Happy. That's the way we structured this, as we're starting to phase that out. And I appreciate the text because it's something I absolutely agree on. We should not, if you're living on a fixed income as a senior, we should not be taxing you on your Social Security.
Let's go to the phone lines. Dory is in Layton. Good afternoon, Dory. What is your question?
My question is, thank you for taking the call, first of all. My question is, why aren't we getting to the root of the problem of the lack of water? Typically only 40% of the inorganic fertilizers applied in conventional farming are absorbed by the plants. The rest pollutes our airs, rivers, lakes, oceans, causing major damage to those ecosystems and to the world's oceans. With a balanced soil web in place and the use of regenerative practices, inorganic fertilizers are not required. We have over 1 billion tons of fertilizer just in the United States alone, and it's destroying our earth. Any questions to that? Where you're a farmer, why aren't we addressing the soil? I know there's a program down in Delta, Utah right now that's experimenting with this, And right now, they're a few of the farmers there are saying they are using 30% less water right now.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that that comment and that question. We're working very closely with Utah State and others on the you mentioned these pilot programs that are happening. There are so many different pilot programs out there, experiments that are taking place right now, looking at fertilizer use, looking at organic fertilizers versus the inorganic fertilizers that you mentioned. No question that we would prefer to use organic fertilizers as much as possible for the very reasons that that you mentioned, the chemicals that are out there that can harm our rivers and streams, doing a better job of that. You also are aware that those fertilizers are significantly more expensive, and with inflationary pressures around food, that can be very difficult. But the water piece of this is really critical and something that we're very interested in. There's several new technologies that are being implemented in different places, not just with fertilizer, although certainly there, again, with different watering systems. And then with indoor growing, there are some wonderful technologies out there that that are allowing farmers and ranchers to grow food indoor under lights. With significantly less water usage, and using that as silage to feed cattle and other animals. So I will say this: you're right. The future is very bright, and I think over the next few years, we're going to see some of these breakthrough technologies really start to ramp up and scale in a way that is going to produce more food with less waste and much less water.
We have just a couple minutes left. I'm going to try and squeeze in this next caller. This is Bruce in Salt Lake. Bruce, what is your question?
Yes, I have a question about UTA. Okay, what are the big projects they're going to come up with next?
Sure. Good. Okay, we'll go ahead and I'll just jump in on that since we're just about out of time. We are doing some pretty exciting things around UTA. We passed a law last year where UTA and the Utah Department of Transportation, UDOT, are going to be working together on big projects. So now, instead of just thinking in silos about mass transit versus expanding our freeways, now they're working in conjunction with each other, working together to drive better and more responsible growth and planning, which is exciting. We just finished the Vineyard Station, which is a huge part of a regional development that's going to be happening there. It's a model for a sustainable development, something we're very excited about. The biggest project I'm excited about is double tracking Front Runner, so that we can have Front Runner running more often, which will allow more people to use it, because you'll have trains every 15 to 20 minutes instead of every half hour, which is going to make a huge difference in our state.
Good job, Governor.
And I think we're out of time.
We are out of time. I'm going to ask one question. You can do a yes or no. Bryson wants to know, is there any likelihood of an MLB team coming to Utah?
Well, I don't know how likely, but we've been, for 10 years, we've been talking about this, Governor Herbert and I. We would love to see it happen. If Major League Baseball decides to expand, there's talk that they might in the next 5 to 10 years, then we certainly hope Salt Lake City is on the map.
All right, Governor, thank you again for spending your time with us and letting our listeners ask their questions.
Thank you, Maria.
And again, you've been listening to Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
KSL FM Midvale, KSL Salt Lake City.